probably unmute us. Hope. It's working.
Yep.
On time. Ladies and gentlemen, my name is Matt Rury, and you're listening to Careless Whispers on CLNS Media. And it's a crisp, smooth sound. Can you believe it?
I love it. I love it. Yep, Rory's on it.
That's Calvin Chamberlain, everyone. That's
phone.
Calvin Chamberlain. He's the one that's supposed to answer the questions because nobody else can right now.
Yeah, that's exactly what's going on. So we had to skip our usual Tuesday show because of technical difficulties. We were ready, all set and ready to go. Lots of topics on the table. Too many, in fact, to even get to probably today. But, yeah, so we just do it on a Thursday instead. How are you feeling tonight, Ray?
I feel all right. Enough dilly-dallying, I guess. The Blog Talk Radio is the one that has these technical difficulties. For once, it's not my fault. The direct connection was not working, so here we are. I'm on Skype. I haven't been on Skype in a while. I had to update it. Still got here on time. Ladies and gentlemen, I know you're all excited out there. I'm going to give you a phone number to call as well. Ha-ha! 323-642-1484. That's the number you can call. I just tweeted it out. I'm at Team Green Truth. Follow at CLNS Media as well. There is a lot to get to, Calvin, because, well, it's the time of the season for large football games and extraordinary talent in the NFL. I don't know if you want to start there. Probably not. Actually, we're not going to start there because we're going to do a show next week, too. We're going to start with basketball, as we usually do.
I guess
it's a LeBron topic, or it could be a Kyrie topic, but I'm going to call it a LeBron topic because this seems to be more about LeBron than anything else.
Yeah. Are you talking about the story that's coming out now about how, it was sort of out there at the time when Paul George was up for option that, up to be traded, that the Cavaliers, were interested in making a three-way trade with Phoenix in which the Cavaliers got Eric Bledsoe and Paul George and Kyrie Irving would end up in Phoenix and Phoenix's number four draft pick, which ended up being Josh Jackson, was going to be part of the trade, part of what went back to Indiana in the package of other minor players. But the trade ended up falling through because Phoenix did not want to trade that number four pick. It's probably a bad move at this point now on Phoenix, but that's
I mean, if we're going to get Kyrie Irving out of the deal, I think they definitely are going to regret that one.
But, so, apparently LeBron was pushing hard for that particular trade. Even though Kyrie had previously asked for a trade in Cleveland, it seems that, like, that had calmed down, and that, in retrospect, once the trade fell through, Kyrie felt disrespected by LeBron pushing so hard for him to be traded, probably understandably so, that's what revived Kyrie's, you know, going into Cleveland and asking, yeah, you know what, I do want to be traded. And so Kyrie ended up getting traded to Boston. Paul George ended up getting traded to Oklahoma City. Eric Bledsoe ended up getting traded to Milwaukee. Cleveland doesn't have any of them. And supposedly LeBron, even at this point in the season, is still angry about the fact that they were unable to complete that deal for Eric Bledsoe and Paul George. Now, I don't know about Paul George, but I do know that Eric Bledsoe shares LeBron's age, and I think it might be the same for George. So I don't know if that factors in at all in terms of the marketing, like wanting his guys. But it is funny to like think about LeBron still being salty about something that didn't happen 9 months ago. It makes me think of like fans. Like, Laker fans, for example, are still angry about the NBA vetoing the Chris Paul trade way back when he was getting traded.
Are you? You're not angry about that?
No, I find it hilarious. I mean, what's done is done.
Uh-huh.
Do I think it was cool? No, but it's over with now. Like, Chris Paul became a Clipper. How could I like Chris Paul? You know what I mean?
There's no reason to like Chris Paul, but I think that this goes a little bit deeper than that stuff. I mean, this is all about LeBron James. It's all about who he wants to play with and him getting his way and going where he wants to go, which, by the way, he wanted Paul George so badly. Paul George was supposed to go to the Lakers after this season. Sorry, Calvin. Sorry to break the news to you. He's not going anywhere. he will be staying in Oklahoma City. I would put money on it right now. He's not going to Los Angeles after the comments that he made and his love for Russell Westbrook. And that's a totally different topic, but that's
– Whoa, whoa, whoa.
That's going to pop. That's going to burst your bubble right there. Goodbye, the dream of
that.
Paul George coming to L.A.
I'm sorry. I don't understand what – are you talking about his comments about saying his free agency will be easier after Russell Westbrook supported him? Is that what you're talking about?
Huh? Yeah, that's right.
So you legitimately think that Paul George is going to stay in Oklahoma City after, just because Russell Westbrook made some comments about how it was sad that he wasn't an All-Star?
It seems a lot more possible.
I'm not even saying that Paul George is going to end up with the Lakers, although you can go ahead and read him the state that he's probably going to be a Lakers. But that being said, Ray, he's definitely not going to be on Oklahoma City next year.
Okay.
I think that's the bank. I'm sticking with it. Not saying he's going to the Lakers, although he's probably going to the Lakers. But
I don't think so.
Not going to be in Oklahoma City.
Anyway.
That's the point. Yeah. Anyway, back to the topic at hand.
Yes, back to the topic at hand. It seems like a desperate move by LeBron James if he's trying to demand people get traded and he's still pouting after not making the deal and seeing what's going on with all those players. And it seems like it's just more of the same from him, pointing fingers and saying that I need better things around me and you need to do better and all of this. You know what, LeBron? At this point, just ride off into the sunset. Just say goodbye.
Yeah.
Go to L.A. without Paul George. Have some fun. See you later. Shut your mouth. I'm tired of it.
Yeah, I don't believe any of the only interesting part of that story to me is the part that LeBron was the biggest pusher in trying to move Kyrie in the first place, and that's what got Kyrie upset. The ever evolving relationship between Kyrie and LeBron is fascinating to me, and LeBron ended up picking Kyrie tonight for the All-Star team, which unfortunately maybe we'll get into next week because there's some interesting things in, like, clearly you can see the order in which they were picked, even though they're not willing to come out and just televise how they were picked. But anyway, we can talk about it another time. The point is like, that's the only interesting part to me, is, like, it seems like LeBron's desire to get Paul George is essentially what pushed Kyrie out. But other than that, is he still angry about it? I don't think so. I feel like it's much more likely that LeBron is manufacturing outrage in order to try to motivate the team to make another deal, to get him George Hill or somebody better. He's going to end up being mad at George Hill anyway. I don't know who the Cavs can get if they don't give up that Brooklyn pick, which, to my mind, they totally should give up the Brooklyn pick. I don't know where you're at on this. We don't have time to get into it too much, but, like, I don't understand why, especially now that this pick is, like, looking like it's not going to be a top three pick. If Brooklyn ends up in the number eight position, like, yeah, you give up that number eight draft pick in order to try to make LeBron happy on the off chance that he'll stay in Cleveland. And even if he doesn't stay in Cleveland, on the off chance that you manage to beat the Warriors, like, they're still good enough, again, in theory, to make the finals, and at least with LeBron, any team has a chance. Why would you, like, give that up for some theoretical future about one day being good enough to maybe get back to the finals again if you get a bunch of other pieces also to play around this eighth pick in the draft? You know what I mean? I would trade that pick in a freaking heartbeat. But
yeah, I'm with you, man. I'd get rid of that thing. I mean, even at the beginning of the season, it was looking to me like the Nets were going to be better than what people thought. And I just, if you can get somebody to bite on that and give you something in return that's going to help you out and make LeBron a little bit happier, by all means, trade the pick. And it's just, I don't know if that's really him orchestrating. Why does he need to go public with stuff like that if he's really trying to orchestrate a trade and get them to make another move? Why can't he just go and say it in private? It doesn't need to be out in public like that. But that is what LeBron is, right? LeBron needs everything to be out in public. He needs everybody to confirm that he's doing the right thing, that he's making the right decision, that he's the greatest ever.
Well,
more of the same.
I think it goes in public to give it the full force of LeBron's pressure. You know what I mean? If LeBron just talks to them in private, then LeBron can't really, like, yeah, he can express his frustration after the fact in public, but, like, he, part of his motivation is, like, hey, I'm going to make the front office look bad. I'm going to make other people look at fault when I decide to leave or, you know, when something doesn't happen. It has nothing to do with me. I did my job. You're not doing your job. I think that's all part of his
sure.
plan. But, yeah, and clearly that's not the only thing that's going wrong in Cleveland. Like, you know, they've lost, like, 5 out of 6. They gave up 148 points to Oklahoma City a week or two ago. They basically have the worst defense in the league. And now, over the weekend, I don't know if you saw this, I'm sure you did, Kevin Love played 5 minutes in a game on Friday, told the team he was sick, left early, didn't play in the team's next game on Saturday. And Cavs players were, you know, without knowing who, because nobody's on the record with it, were reportedly irate. They had to have a team meeting where Kevin Love then had to come and explain himself because they thought he was faking being sick and they were angry at the coaching staff for letting him go home early. And then apparently he explained himself to the team's satisfaction. So now it's all better now. What do you think about that, Ray?
That seems like even more finger-pointing. It's just more of the same finger-pointing from this whole locker room, and it starts with LeBron, I'm sure. It's like, man, those guys, they just sort of seem like they're falling apart at the seams, and I guess you never really know. Maybe they'll turn it around. And last week or a couple weeks ago, I said that I thought that they were going to be fine and they would turn it around. But then the tailspin continued, and I mean they're just in a bad way right now. But it's finger pointing back and forth, and just trying to call people out, and then he makes up with them, and it's a whole bunch of BS. And I think Kyrie Irving put it best in that that type of hashing things out doesn't necessarily work, and that's part of the reason that he wanted to get out of there. Whereas Brad Stevens, for some reason, has a different culture, and it's more of an open dialogue, and people express their concerns and their frustrations, and nobody really gets in fights, and it's none of this pettiness that seems to be happening in the Cavs locker room. So I don't know. I feel like somebody's on their way out of town, and I'm wondering who it's going to be. That's it.
You know what this tells me is that Kevin Love's teammates hate him because.
Yeah.
Like, what kind of situation? Just think about you at work. Like, what kind of situation would have to exist if you had a coworker say, like, I'm sick and I'm needing to go home, and then have you turn to another coworker and go, like, that guy's not sick. He just trying to get out of work. Like, either A, you would have to
crazy.
Be like some. It have to be like some event that you knew about, right? Like, it have to be like. Oh, he's going to the World's Fair today. He already told me how much he wanted to go
sure.
to the World's Fair. I don't know why that's my example, because it's funny. But
the World's
yeah,
Fair.
Yeah, it has to be that. Yeah, well, you work in 1908. It's either that
okay.
or it's like, or it's like, yeah, this guy Steve is slimy, and he's always trying to get out of things, right? That's what it is. Like, you start thinking that your coworker is faking being sick to get out of games, when you already don't trust it, right? When you already think, like, there has to be a baseline level of distrust. For Kevin Love to be in a game, come out of the game, not return, not play the next game, and have people going, he's not really sick. Like, pre that incident, Kevin Love has to have, like, done things like that to make guys be going, like, this guy, Kevin Love is doing it again, right? Otherwise, like, multiple players on the team thinks that a guy who says he's sick is not really sick? What is that? And then, to even compound that, what kind of explanation could Kevin Love give to then make everybody go, oh, well, I guess I'm satisfied with that? He's just going to come and be like, you know what, I was sick. Look, I was coughing, or whatever kind of sickness he was. Let's say it's stomach sickness. And he goes, yeah, I went to the locker room and threw it up. And so everyone's going to go, oh, I guess you really were sick. Like, either you saw him be sick or you didn't. Like, I don't understand
right.
how he then becomes credible, like what he could have said to them. Just
yeah,
make,
it sounds like
a
scapegoat
yeah.
situation. So maybe he's the one that's on his way out of town. Maybe they're going to ship him out for a DeAndre Jordan or something crazy. Wouldn't that be something? But, like, I don't understand why it even gets to that point. You're going for an NBA championship. He's already helped you win one. Like, he helped you get back there again. I don't understand where it's all coming from. And the only additions are Isaiah and Jay Crowder. So maybe they're putting some wrinkles in that locker room that they don't like Kevin Love or something. Like, because LeBron seems to be fine with him, right? Everybody else has been fine with him for a couple of years now.
Well, there are some sort of on-court indications about Isaiah being able to play with Kevin Love. Like, people are talking about how terrible the defense is when they're both on the floor. Because Kevin Love is usually playing the five in that scenario. I'm sorry?
And they're both a liability defensively. I mean, Kevin Love is a great rebounder, a great shooter, a great all-around basketball player. But, I mean, he's not that great defensively. And Isaiah's a liability, obviously, because of his size.
Yeah, I feel like Kevin Love's bad defensive ratings are a little bit overrated. I think he's bad defensively at the five. I don't think he's that bad at the four. But anyway, but all that being said, he is normally mostly playing the five with Isaiah. Plus, the sort of Isaiah's one-man offense takes away from Kevin Love. Apparently, Kevin Love's shots in his offense go way down whenever Isaiah's in the game. And since Isaiah came back with his injury, in the games that he played, like, Kevin Love's scoring is down like 4 points a game. Like, across the board, his stats are down. Interesting thing, because Isaiah, even though he's taking shots, he's not really playing well either because he hasn't completely recovered from that hip injury. So if they made a move to bench Jay Crowder today, I think maybe they can't, because I was going to say maybe they should just play Isaiah less, but they probably can't do that, right? Because in order to win, they need Isaiah playing well and sort of fitting in with the team. So maybe they just have to eat this and hope it works out.
Yeah, I mean, he's a potent offensive player. I think if they're going to win games, they need to find a way to utilize his talents. And it might take a little while for him to get back into shape and to be in game mode and just be the player that he was last year. Maybe he won't be the player that he was last year for a little while, but if they're going to be a championship caliber team, they either need Isaiah to produce or they need to get value back for him. They can't just let him sit there on their roster not doing anything.
All right, one more quick cast topic. LeBron scored his 30,000th point, I believe, last night, maybe Tuesday night. Did you hear about it? I don't know if you know this, but I knew about it because LeBron told me. He sent a tweet out of a picture of himself as a young boy in a basketball jersey and sort of had a long third person referencing paragraph where he talked about his greatness in, like, you know, from the time when he was a young boy and, like, having these dreams, and now you finally did it, even though he hadn't done it yet when he sent the tweet. And he said, "I want to be one of the first to congratulate." He referred to himself as the king. This is so incredibly obnoxious that I don't know. Part of me wants to, like, give him credit for being so obnoxious and unself-aware, but the other part of me makes me think that, like, for however many discussions we've had about, like, LeBron's greatness and is he better than Jordan now, where I'm being forced to take this position where, like, yeah, he, you know, talking about his greatness, like, there's still out there, I mean, for all the, like, doubts about how, you know, him winning championships, all these things, like, there's still one thing that we should never forget, and which is that, like, LeBron has an incredibly annoying personality that should, like, he should never be liked for that reason alone.
You're absolutely right, and it's just more, that's what I meant when I said earlier, more of the same of LeBron James, sort of putting everything out in the open, being public with everything. This thing is just the worst, because he is talking in a third person, he's congratulating himself, and I don't know if you saw, but there were a handful of people much more than a handful of people that were basically doing the same thing and responding and mocking him and putting their own pictures of their childhood up on the screen and giving themselves a pat on the back. Congratulations to get to this point, et cetera. I believe I saw that Jason Tatum was one of those people, which is hilarious if that was actually a post from him and not something that was just Photoshopped that I was seeing when I was scrolling through Twitter. But I mean, people were doing it, so he basically put himself out there to be mocked, and that's what ended up happening.
Yes, I'm glad that's what happened. To me, it's just like I just wish he went at just 100% with it. It's just this constant like pretending to be a good guy and even that like that post is like it involves false humility where he's like you know talking about how like the struggles and you've come a long way in your dreams and like. He just lacks self-awareness to the degree. If he was just outright arrogant, look, I kind of want like the Deion Sanders version of LeBron, or the like late Kobe period of LeBron, where LeBron just says "F it," you know what I mean? He's not there. I want the F in LeBron who just comes out and says, you know what? Like yeah, you know I don't care. Look, these are the guys that I want. I don't care about the front office. Get me my guys instead of just playing this game that we've been talking about where he's stewing privately and he comes and he everything's got to be read through tea leaves and what does he actually mean about it. Like, I'm so over it with this guy. Just come right out with everything. That's what I want. Instead of this false congratulatory post, just be like, yeah, I'm awesome. Be like Ricky Henderson. Just, you know, rip the rim off and talk about how you're now the greatest.
I think it's just the way that he was brought up. It's this whole subtweet social media culture, and like it is who he is. He needs to be praised. He needs to be told that he's excellent and wonderful. And it just it's getting tiresome for sure. So,
all right,
I'm with you.
I guess the Cavs are getting tiresome at this point in the show, right? We should move on.
I would say so. About 20 minutes, yep, I'd say so.
All right, well, I looked through this email that really wasn't in order, but I'm just going to go to the next thing on this anyway.
Yeah, you might as well.
Yeah. The Charlotte Hornets say that they're interested in trading Kemba Walker. Michael,
that's a big deal.
You know, they put it out to the league. Apparently some Hornets fans were concerned, so Michael Jordan later clarified that, yes, you know, they are putting him out there to, like, see what kind of offers they can get for him. But Michael Jordan claims that they're only interested in trading Kemba Walker for an all-star. What do you say to that?
I think that's fine, but it's kind of still a knock on Kemba Walker. Are you saying that Kemba Walker's not an all-star or that he's just not a good enough all-star? I don't know what you're getting at here, Mr. Jordan, with all due respect.
Yeah, I don't understand what this means. First of all, for the record, he's not an all-star. I mean, like, he's literally not an all-star, right? Kemba Walker has not
right.
been an all-star, has he?
I don't think he has. I'll double check that, though.
He's not made an all-star team. So you're essentially asking, the Hornets are saying, like, we want to trade Kemba Walker, apparently, but we want to trade Kemba Walker for somebody better than Kemba Walker,
right.
or...
Yep.
Or somebody like, let's just say he's like around and all, because he is like a near all-star player. Let's say you want to trade Kemba Walker for a guy who's about as good as Kemba Walker, right? I don't know if like who that would be.
I'm sorry, Calvin. He actually was an all-star last year. One-time all-star.
Oh, was he? All right. Well, I'm putting that on the Eastern Conference. In any case, so that defeats my point somewhat. But still, he's not like an all-star. He's like a borderline guy. Yeah,
right. No, I think that actually backs up your point because it's sort of like, well, wait a minute. This is the first time that he made the All-Star team. Are you just assuming that he's going to continue on that pace, and that's why you're saying that you need something better than him? It still reeks of Jordan saying that Walker's not good enough.
But see, my point is not even that he thinks Walker isn't good enough, because obviously he thinks Walker isn't good enough if that's why he's putting it on the market, right? My thing is, I don't understand what do the Hornets get? Never mind what do like other teams get, but what do the Hornets get out of trading Kemba Walker for somebody who's about as good as Kemba Walker? Let's say you trade Kemba Walker for like, I don't know, Goran Dragic, or maybe think he's better than Goran Dragic, but you get what I'm saying. But you trade him for a guy who's of similar talent. What if you trade him for Dennis Smith Jr.? Like, the Hornets are still sort of in the exact same place, right? Like, a mediocre mediocre, like just out of the playoffs team that's not going to draft high, nor like maybe they'll be good enough to like make the 8 or 7 in the East some years. You're still in the exact same position you were in before. The only reason to trade Kemba Walker in the first place is to rebuild and get assets, right? Like, otherwise, you're looking to trade. You know, you have contracts that are onerous and get guys to play with Kemba Walker. Like what does an All-Star even get you? Unless the All-Star you're trading Kemba Walker for is Anthony Davis, like what or like Kevin Durant? Like what is Jordan talking about, Rick?
Yeah, I don't know. I think that he's just trying to backpedal and sort of make himself look better for trying to trade their all-star point guard, and fans are freaking out, and he's trying to sort of squash their worry, and I don't think it really worked, in my opinion.
No, I don't think so either, because it doesn't make sense, like even asking for an all-star. I can't think of a single all-star, and maybe you can if you give it some thought. I can't even all-star in which trading for Kemba Walker, like, what do we'd have to find a team with, like, no point. Denver? Look, who's an all-star in Denver? You know what I mean? You're not trading Jokic for him, right? Paul
yeah,
Millsap?
I guess that's it. I don't know who else it would be.
Well, if you're Denver, would you trade Paul
Millsap
for Kemba Walker?
I don't think so. I mean, Millsap's
probably not, right?
Playing pretty well for them, yeah. I'm not. I don't think I'm doing
I'm
that.
I'm just thinking about a team that like could use a point guard, right? And this is the other thing about the Kemba Walker situation. Like, San Antonio. Would you trade LaMarcus Aldridge for him?
No, I don't think so. He started to fit into that team.
Right. It's like Greg Popovich just throwing out Kevin Durant as a guy that you don't even want for Aldridge and. In his comment,
right.
So
right.
Yeah, I don't think he'd be happy with a Kemba Walker scenario. Kemba Walker is just a better Patty Mills. Let's be honest. I mean, I don't mean to. It sounds like I'm denigrating him, but I guess really what I'm saying is like, even if they want to trade Kemba Walker, right? How many teams in the NBA right now like have a need for Kemba Walker? Forget like and then would have an All Star to be able to trade for him. But even beyond that, I don't. I think that they're going to be able to trade this guy and get like what they want for him just because of the abundance of point guards and more importantly the fact that he's a small point guard who like needs the ball in his hand. Where's the fit for him?
Well, this is basically what Danny Ainge was saying about Rajon Rondo a few years ago or way back when he traded him. I mean, everybody has a point guard. They already have their point guards, and the value is not out there. So I think Jordan is finding out that he's pretty much in the same boat, that there's not going to be many options as far as a trade for Walker is concerned. And this is the way it goes with point guards. I mean, you stick with your guy for long enough, and if it doesn't work out, you have to find somebody new. And if you can't just trade up as far as a point guard is concerned, because it's such an important piece to winning basketball.
Now I'm trying to think of what. Now I'm just trying to do hypothetical Kemba trade. If you were the Charlotte Hornets, and I don't have the trade machine right in front of me, but let's say you could find bench guys and stuff to make the salary work. Would you trade primary pieces? Would you trade Kemba Walker for Dario Saric?
I mean,
I like
if I'm the Hornets, I don't know. I'm not huge on Saric. I'm sure that maybe I'm undervaluing him just because he's on Philadelphia, but I don't know. That seems to me like Charlotte wouldn't – I don't know if that really helps them. They'd have to get another pick or something in return, right?
Yeah, I'm assuming Charlotte and Philadelphia's pick, sure. They're not getting that Lakers-Kings pick. But they could probably get Philadelphia's pick.
I don't know. That's a tough one.
Philadelphia's pick is still going to be like around 12 or something. It's like it would be a bad pick.
Right, but Walker was the ninth pick or something? Yeah.
Right. Okay. But that's the kind of value that he would probably get.
Yeah, it's – I don't know, man. That's a tough one. Saric is I mean, Sarge is a solid player, but is he a game changer? I don't know.
Would you trade him for like would you trade him for like Marquise Chris and Alex Lentz?
I don't really know. I guess I don't know enough about Chris.
Fair enough.
But I mean, we're talking about guys that still aren't proven. Like this, it's a tough situation.
Yeah.
I don't know if they're going to find a deal that's going to look good to anyone.
No, they're not. They're really not. So, but I still kind of feel like they need to do it. Do you think I'm wrong? Like, I understand Kemba Walker's
their
guy, it's
something that they probably are going to be stuck. Either they're stuck with him and they're not that good, or they trade him and they're probably not going to be that good. So, they need to do something.
Theory that, like, you have to be either at completely at the bottom or completely at the top. In general, I don't think that's like a hard and fast statement. I've used the Rockets as an example of a team that was like pretty good for years, and they slowly compiled assets and turned those into Harden, and still compiled assets and got even better. But the Hornets don't have that many assets. That's what it comes down to. They've given a bunch of guys bad contracts. They don't have that many young guys who like have promise on the team. I feel like because of that. They don't play in like a great market, but even if they did, they're not like in a position where they're going to have cap money going forward for the next couple of years. Like I don't see any other option but getting rid of Kemba Walker for them, and just becoming a terrible team that picks at the top of the draft. I don't recommend it for everybody, but considering what their situation is, what other choice do they have other than to like continue being this mediocre team that like maybe makes a 7 or 8 every once in a while, and like has no hope. I'm not sure that I think hope matters, right? If you can be a 7 or 8 team seed, but if you have hope, like the 76ers, if they get the 8 seed this year, they'd be ecstatic. The Hornets get the 8 seed, who in Charlotte cares? It's two different things.
Right. If there's no future, then the fans probably aren't going to really get behind the team. And Philadelphia fans are definitely behind their team at this point. They are excited about what's going on, and you can say that they have a better future than Charlotte for sure. So I just, it seems like a lost cause for Jordan, and he needs to figure out something. And I just don't know what it is, because it's going to be a long rebuilding process for that team.
I'm just going to jump right to this Markel Fultz thing. Cause I just mentioned the Sixers. Have you seen video of Markel Fultz shooting?
Absolutely. Some of it. And it's glorious.
As a Celtics fan, I'm sure it is glorious. But this is like one of the great mysteries of our time. I know people are talking about this to some degree, but I still feel like they're not talking about it enough. What happened to this guy? I know he like came in. Let's just do a quick recap. He came into the preseason. Look, he looked good in summer league, right? Shot like a normal human being. Came into the preseason shooting that weird, funky, like worse than Lonzo Ball-ish form, right, where he's just shot putting the ball towards the rim. It made no sense. Regulation came out that his shoulder wasn't hurt. Then that controversy happened with his agent where he like leaked some information that turned out to be untrue, and he had to double back and make another statement about the shoulder. So then Fultz disappears for months, right? We haven't heard from him. It's supposed to be a minor thing. He's been gone for months. He still hasn't played. Only played in 4 games this season. He's been back around to gym shooting. Supposedly the shoulder is healed, but he's still shooting the same way he did when he shot that way because he supposedly had a shoulder problem. What is going
on? I want to know who in Philadelphia is changing this. Who messed with this kid's shot? Because something happened here, and whether it's the shoulder injury or someone trying to tweak his form or something, he's all messed up now. And the fact that they're just putting him out in the open for practice and just having him shoot, he doesn't have to shoot in front of everyone. He can shoot privately and try and figure it out, but they have him shooting in front of reporters who have cameras rolling, and there is video of it, and it's just really ugly. So I don't know what their approach is here. I don't know what they're doing. And it's almost as though they don't seem to care what happens with Markelle Fultz, because they are happy with Simmons and Embiid, et cetera. It seems to me like Danny Ainge pulled another fast one on Philadelphia. Now, I'm not saying that Ainge knew something, but he lucked out again if he didn't know anything, and it looks bad on them.
Yeah, this is the part of it as the, I don't know if you want to call me neutral. You can call me neutral. I'm pretty neutral. As the neutral third observer, this is the most annoying part of it to me, because look, the summer league, that happened after the NBA draft, so in Markelle Fultz's shot looked fine. I know he got hurt, okay. But I'm talking about his form. His form was what it was in college. Not that, like, maybe it wouldn't have translated over a long period of time to the NBA. Who knows? That's speculation, right? But right now, what we're talking about is like what his actual form looks like. It was something different in summer league, which again was after the draft. There's no way that Danny Ainge could have like had the, unless he's got like this Back to the Future book. There's no chance that he would have, that he knew that,
no,
that
I know.
Markelle Fultz was going to injure his shoulder. I know you, no, Rory, I know you know.
No,
but I feel like,
I'm not saying,
I don't
I'm not
think
saying
everybody
that,
knows.
I'm saying that he must have seen something. Like, he could, maybe he saw something in the kid's shot that said, and said, well, I don't think this is going to work out. We would have to change this, and I don't want to deal with it. Maybe that's more what I'm thinking. Maybe there was something there that the Celtics staff saw and said, we got to pass on this kid for this shooting reason.
Or maybe he just didn't make sense with the team that the Celtics had at the time, which is what I've been saying for months, by the way. Maybe Jason Tatum always made more sense. Maybe he saw the chance at getting, going from 1 to 3, taking a guy who, like, he didn't feel, maybe he didn't feel totally comfortable with him because he saw something he didn't like, but maybe he just felt more comfortable getting a guy at 3 that he liked and also picking up that other pick while, like, having a guy who fits in with the team better. There are logical reasons for going from 1 to 3 and passing on Fultz that have nothing to do with, like, thinking that Fultz was going to fail in any respect. That completely makes sense, but it's so easy now for the narrative to be like, oh, genius Danny Ainge knew. And, yeah, it is hilarious that it worked out this way. And, like, if I'm a Celtics fan, I'm not going to lie, I might be doing this, like, some version of this, although – maybe not completely, because, you know, when people try to say stuff like that about the Lakers, I'll always be like, nah, blah, blah, blah. But it's like, I don't think it was like, I don't like Markelle Fultz at all. I just have a hard time, like, buying into that notion, because it was going to be Markelle Fultz until it wasn't.
It was going to be Markelle Fultz until it wasn't. I mean, that's not what Danny Ainge says. He says he was going to be taking Tatum regardless. So,
do you buy that?
I do buy that, and I've bought that the whole time. Otherwise, why would you hold out so long? I guess I can't really. He didn't really hold out that long. What was it, like 10 days before the draft he pulled the trigger, or was that on a draft night?
Yeah.
No. No, it was before the draft. So. He didn't. It's not like he held out, but either way, he said he waited until after the draft to say something about it. So he's not going to tip his hand and tell Philadelphia before the draft that he was going to take Tatum either way. But yeah, I believe that Tatum was his number one, and he's happy that he ended up being there. He predicted the draft correctly. Not that it was difficult to do. Everybody was predicting the draft to go that way, but apparently Philadelphia, I don't know. They thought something else was going to happen with Ainge. Ainge must have sold them on the fact that he was ready to take Markelle Fultz, but I believe him when he says that Tatum was his guy. And that's kind of a way that you can sort of stick it to Philadelphia afterwards. And maybe they won't believe you going forward if you insist on something like that. But if you really like Tatum that much and you want to make the shrewd move, then you play your cards that way. And it worked out for him. Hopefully he doesn't need to make a good deal with them in the future.
Yeah, but they didn't need. Here's the thing: is the Celtics didn't need to play that kind of gamesmanship because the Lakers wouldn't have taken Fultz anyway.
You think the Lakers would have taken Fultz over Ball?
There's no question the Lakers would have taken Fultz over Ball.
Really?
Even if, like, yeah, even in, and I don't say that in, like, because
even
I
after
bad,
all the
I
Lonzo Ball praise and all the LeVar Ball talk of him being a Laker and Magic Johnson loving him and all, even after all that, you think they would have taken Markelle Fultz if he was sitting there?
There's absolutely no doubt in my mind that we're going to take Fultz.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah. I mean, I don't think that they thought for a moment that Fultz was going to be available. So, but there were definitely, like, questions about whether or not. And the biggest reason why is because they were concerned about LeVar more than anything. Mm-hmm. Like, they only ended up drafting Lonzo Ball because LeVar Ball assured them hilariously now, when you think back to it, that, like, no, the second the Lakers draft Lonzo, my job is done. I won't be involved at all. It's just a hilarious thing to think back on, right?
Yeah,
now,
I'm surprised that he hasn't been saying much, but I guess he is overseas right now, so we'll see if he pops his head around again.
I don't know if you know this, but he just got named assistant coach to the Lithuanian basketball team over there.
Gosh.
So he's going to be over there for a minute coaching that team.
Ow. Just because they don't know any better? Oh, man, these poor Lithuanian people, they're just going to – they're going to grow up. I guess they're not kids. Or are they kids? Is it like an under 18 league, or is it an actual professional league?
It's an actual professional league of adults, and I don't think it's that they don't know any better. I think that it's worth it for them to get the fame and notoriety connected to having LeVar Ball on the team. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's why the team signed them in the first place, to have the Ball brand connected to them, so they might as well.
The Big Baller brand. That's right. Their logo, the Big Baller brand logo, is at center court for this team. Unbelievable.
Yeah, they've already like changed their schedule. They did exhibitions to support the Ball brand and like allow the Ball brothers to play when they would have not otherwise gotten playing time. So they're just catering to them as much as possible.
Gross.
You might as well make them head coach. You know.
Yes. I don't like it at all.
All right, well.
So, Calvin, I suggest that you check out Twitter at some point, because now, back to one of our topics for just one second from earlier, the All-Star game and LeBron picking Kyrie Irving to be on his team. There are now memes going around of LeBron with, like, a sad face looking at his phone saying, "Yo, Kyrie, I'm going to pick you. What do you think?" And Kyrie being like, "All right." And LeBron being like, "I'm really excited to see you." And Kyrie being like, "Yeah, cool, man." And then LeBron saying, "Oh, but I miss you." That type of stuff. I think it's hilarious. So take a look. Take a gander later on when you get a chance. Moving on.
Well, what's funny
ahead.
About that is, it's like if you look at the order of guys picked, there's like, they pick the starters first. There's almost no question that, like, Kyrie got picked last. But we'll talk about it next week. Because, like...
Oh, really? There's an order out there. I haven't seen any order. I just saw a list.
There's no order. But what I'm telling you, Ray, and we'll do this next week. What I'm telling you is, if you look at the names that both guys chose, okay, there's a clear order that takes shape based on logic. For example, Kyrie Irving being on the LeBron's team... Kevin Durant being on LeBron's team means that clearly Kevin Durant was the first pick in the draft, because Steph Curry would have picked Kevin Durant first as his teammate and as Kevin Durant.
Who had the most votes? LeBron had the most votes?
LeBron went first, Curry went second.
So Durant goes first, sure.
Yeah, we're going to go, and there's other things, like, for example, Curry wouldn't pick Kyrie Irving early. Because why would Curry be in the starting lineup with Kyrie? That's like going to be a terrible defensive lineup. You know, there's logic to it. We'll get into that more next week, though.
All right,
and
great.
Let's get into Kawhi Leonard.
Oh, so, this is a tough one.
Kawhi has, unfortunately, the shoulder issue, right? That he's been having all year?
It's quad tendonitis or something.
Yeah, I should have researched this more. I think
he's basically had a leg injury. There was that whole thing at the beginning of the season where he was limping up the stairs of the team plane and he couldn't even move, and they've been sitting him out this entire time, and he came back and he looked pretty good. And then they had to sit it. They were being precautionary and they were sitting him every once in a while. But all of a sudden they shut him down again, saying it's the same lingering injury. And the funny thing about this, Calvin, get ready for your conspiracy theory hats, or get your conspiracy theory hats on, because you know I love that stuff. And it is Kawhi Leonard's contract season. He is up for the Super Max next year, most likely. Could it possibly be that San Antonio is trying to squash that contract and lower it based on the amount of time that he plays? I don't want to badmouth Popovich and the team, but it reeks of something that Bill Belichick would do by making a guy sit so he doesn't reach his incentive on catches or something, or just trying to save the team a buck and keep the player as well. And it smells fishy to me, because from all accounts that I've seen, Kawhi Leonard says he wants to play and that he's ready to play and that he is physically capable of playing. So I don't know why he's not.
Well, that's an interesting thought, but my response to that is I feel like it would take something like a torn ACL to like legitimately prevent Kawhi from getting a supermax contract, or you know, or walking for a max contract somewhere else, right? Like in that scene, like if the Spurs played hardball with Kawhi in this offseason, then like go ahead and try to play a hardball with Kawhi. He would be on another team making like whatever the max was, and maybe he's not getting the supermax. But I think if he thought that he might not be getting the supermax, he would probably be trying to be traded right now. Although there is an element of and this is the funny thing to me about like any rumor related to Kawhi. It's like, who knows, right? No, because Kawhi doesn't talk, nobody really knows what Kawhi thinks about anything. So there's
right.
Naturally like an air, but then you hear like all these reports. Okay, there's tension between him and the Spurs, right? That's the primary report, that over this injury, apparently, like, the Spurs kind of feel like he can play, and Kawhi, like, said he didn't feel comfortable, and that's why they shut him down the second time. And so, like, that's where the negative feelings are supposedly coming from. But then Jalen Rose came out. Did you hear what Jalen Rose said? About how, like, the thing that's at the actual base of the tension is the fact that Kawhi feels like he can't get stars to come to San Antonio to play with him, and he can't win, and he's tired of this organization.
Interesting.
Now, to me, those are two completely different things, right? Like, not having trust that the organization, like, has your long-term health, like, in its best interest is completely separate from, like, I don't think I can win here.
Right.
And so, like, my thing is, I don't, like, he's been in San Antonio forever. They've never really gotten free. Yeah, they got LaMarcus Aldridge, and yeah, they got a 75-year-old Pau Gasol. I don't count Pau Gasol. LaMarcus Aldridge, okay. Maybe they've had, somewhat of a bad track record with free agents. But I find it hard to believe that, like, he's just coming to this conclusion now. And also that, like, he's thinking this at a moment in which he's hurt and he's been hurt all season and he's frustrated with the hurtness. Like, why is instead his primary concern is, like, he can't even stay on the court. Like, why would they even trade for a guy right now to try to, like, play with Kawhi, and it's not in season? Like, I don't know. I don't really buy, even though, again, I could be wrong because I can't get a read on Kawhi, but I just change the timing of what Jalen is saying doesn't really make sense to, like, what's going on with the Spurs right now. I did not know he was a free agent this coming off season, though. That's interesting. So why did they didn't try to offer him a contract before the season started? I got to research this more now.
Maybe I'm just talking out of my ass, but I thought he was a supermax. Yeah, yes, eligible to sign the 5-year $217 million deal in 2018.
Okay, but he's probably not a free agent after this year, right? He's probably just eligible because it's the last year of his deal or whatever. is she right now?
Yes. So I guess I misrepresented that a little bit, but who knows? I mean, maybe they're trying to mess around with him. So I mean, I don't know what the thresholds are for that, and whether you need to have certain criteria to be able to qualify for that deal. But maybe they're trying to mess around with that.
Well, he's under contract in 2018, 2019, but then he has a player option for 2019-2020 at $21 million. So if the Spurs really can't even get out of that contract if Kawhi Leonard doesn't want to for two more seasons after this season. So the timeline of what you're saying doesn't really make sense.
All right, well, there goes that one.
Yeah, fair enough. No, I throw things out there that turn out to be completely ridiculous all the time. I don't.
That's what
conspiracy
theories are, and that's what runs this show.
Yeah, we don't like to be accurate. We like to be interesting. That's what I say.
We're not journalists.
I like to say things that are outrageous. Okay, Ray.
The shock jocks of CLNS Media.
Yeah, well, I mean, we probably should have started with this if we were following the formula that we followed, but did you happen to catch any of that Celtics-Lakers game the other day?
Just the first half, unfortunately. I wanted to see the whole thing, but then when I saw the score in the morning, I was happy I didn't.
Yeah, okay, so a couple of things. One, you know, just quickly, you know, concerned media for the Celtics right now. Any? This is just a whatever stretch?
Not really. Not really. I was hoping that they were going to come away from this road trip with a 3-1 record. I thought they were going to sweep L.A., or sweep the Staples Center, however you want to word it. They would lose to Golden State and then find a way to win against Denver. But that Denver game I don't think it's going to be easy. So it's possible that they turn around on this thing and go 1-3. But either way, I'm not that concerned. I think they're going to be fine. I think they might even have a move or two up their sleeve. Or at least ideas of a move. And I feel like I'm starting to come around to the idea that I wouldn't mind seeing Gordon Hayward on the floor at some point this season. I'm still a little worried about him performing in the playoffs, but the fact that he is shooting out in the open in Staples Center, not jumping yet, but still shooting flat-footed is a great sign. And I think he's well on his way, and he might end up seeing some playing time towards the end of the regular season, and I'm starting to be okay with that. For months, I was saying, shut him down, just bring him back next year. But if he's really progressing this quickly, then I'm starting to think that it probably wouldn't really hurt much, because either way, they're not going to win the NBA title, and also either way, they appear to be the favorites to go to the finals at this point, unless Cleveland figures themselves out and or makes a move to get better.
Ray, I saw a stat that said, like, the Celtics are significantly better with Aaron Baines on the court than without him, and I sort of saw this, a lot of this in the Celtics later game. Look, I watched that game. You know, Celtics fans, call in if you wanted to tell me I'm crazy, but, like, the Lakers probably should have won that game by 8 to 10 points, because the Celtics, like, they still seem to have the same problem about matching up with size. And the Lakers are the tallest team in the NBA. I saw a little bit of that Orlando game, and it seemed like the same thing. When teams go to big lineups, especially now with sort of Tatum and Brown falling off a little bit, their offense is, like, it's not quite, like, as punchy as it was in terms of, like, being able to spread out these bigger teams and get those threes on them. Like, are you concerned about certain matchups potentially, you know, down the line, like teams that have bigger squads, or do you think, like, that's overblown as well?
Well, I think that if the Cavs saw anything about the game last night against the Clippers, even though the Celtics won that going away, I think DeAndre Jordan performed pretty well against them. And yeah, they went to the hack of DeAndre, and the free throw thing kind of bit him a little bit. But overall, I think a guy like that can hurt the Celtics, because he is a guy that would overmatch Baines or overpower Baines. And when Baines is out there, I think he actually excels against a little bit of a smaller lineup. And part of the reason he's good for the Celtics is because it lets Al Horford play a little bit more of the power forward position. So if Cleveland was watching last night, I think they'll probably be even more interested in getting a guy like DeAndre Jordan to match up against the Celtics. As for the other matchups in the Eastern Conference, Washington really doesn't scare me a whole lot. I haven't been following them too much, but I'm also not hearing a lot about Marcin Gortat at this point. I don't think that he's really anything special anymore. Yeah, I don't think that he's anything special anymore. So as far as their big guys are concerned, I'm not worried about it. Toronto scares me, but for different reasons. I think Valanciunas is a great player, but for some reason the Celtics know how to go at him. And Ibaka has been a shell of himself this year. So it's not the big men on Toronto that scare me. It's DeMar DeRozan and who's going to cover all those guards, because there's only so many guys that you can roll out and try and guard them for a whole game. So I would be worried about the offensive firepower from Toronto's guards. Otherwise, man,
Drummond?
I'm good with the matchups right now. Drummond is scary, sure. Drummond is definitely scary, but I'm not buying into Detroit right now. I don't feel like they're going to end up being there. And I mean, it would have to be a first round thing, because if they get into the playoffs, they're going to sneak in my opinion. They're two games back right now, and I think that Milwaukee is better than them. And I mean, New York is interesting right now, but I'm pretty sure that Detroit is going to be on the outside looking in. I like the way the standings have sort of shaped up so far, so I'm not really concerned about Detroit. But if they do get in, I don't think they have enough offensive firepower to win a seven-game series. So, yeah, Drummond would worry me a little bit, but he can only win a couple games by himself.
I mean, you're making a good point, and I'm looking at the Eastern Conference standings right now. I mean, I just, Embiid and Whiteside would be the two, right? We haven't talked about either one of them.
Right. Philadelphia would be the one that scares me the most, I think. Whiteside is a solid player, but I think that Miami focuses on him a little bit too much against the Celtics, and they can exploit that on the other end. So I feel like he's not a great offensive player, but they're going to try and use him too much. And if you get Baines to play well enough and sustain and not have get in foul trouble too much, he can body up Whiteside enough to throw him off his game. Embiid, on the other hand, I would be worried about. And Philadelphia, I think, is a scary team, especially since they just got a win against the Celtics. They are going to probably feel some momentum if they meet them in the playoffs, and they're going to be hungry and they're going to be ready to go. I think that would be a tough series. But ultimately, again, it comes down to the offensive firepower. It comes down to the composure. And not to say the Celtics are this veteran team, because we know all about their young players, but I think between the coaching and the veteran leaders that they do have, they would end up winning that series too.
All right. Fair enough, Roy. I can buy most of what you're selling here. Philadelphia will be an interesting playoff team, just looking at it right now, because they're going to be playing, the Celtics, Toronto, or Cleveland probably. So that's going to be a fun first-round matchup for whoever gets saddled with them, assuming Philadelphia doesn't fall out. But
right.
Anyway, real quick to the Lakers, Ray. Again, the Lakers probably should have won that game by double digits. They were up pretty consistently in the fourth quarter. They continued to get offensive rebound after offensive rebound. They're a pretty good defensive team. They're an okay offensive team when Lonzo plays, not really so much when he doesn't. But Rui, I wish that you saw this game, because this is like the Chargers this year were third in the NFL in offense and fourth in defense, and they missed the playoffs because they're 32nd in special teams, and they missed half their field goals this year. That's essentially what the Lakers are doing right now. They're playing well. They've won 7 out of 9. but they're the worst free throw shooting team I think I've ever seen. Like, the Celtics just in that fourth quarter, look, the Lakers were up 5 or 6, okay? The Celtics kept fouling them, putting them at the free throw line. The final 2 minutes of the first quarter, even, like, guys who are okay free throw shooters, like, normally, it seems like situationally they get so much worse. They shot a lot of free throws in that game with, like I told you, the Celtics kept fouling them. I don't have the box score in front of me, but I think they shot, like, 30. They made 58% of their free throws in that game. That's what I remember, 58%. The entire team shot like DeAndre Jordan. Okay, and again, there was no, like, one guy that they kept focusing on.
I was going to say, were the Celtics just fouling them on purpose? Or, I mean, what was the deal with that?
Well, in the final minute, they fouled them, like, four, because the Celtics, like, burned all their timeouts. So the Celtics were out of timeouts. They were fouling repeatedly to put them at the line, and the Lakers just couldn't. I think they missed two, if I remember correctly, they missed two free throws. Twice in the final minute. They missed both. Two separate times in the final minute. And the Celtics had a chance to win, but they got the ball back with no timeouts, about 4 seconds
21
left.
Of 36. Oof. I'm looking at it right now.
That's what I'm saying. They shot 36 free throws. Marcus Smart, ran up from the full court and took a contested three when he could have passed to a wide open.
Right.
He could have passed
Terry
to a wide open.
Yeah, I saw those screenshots and stuff of that in the last play. It's just, I wish that he had just chucked it up there. He had a perfect lane, and then by the time he got into the position to be anywhere near passing or shooting the ball, he had to shoot it because that's just it's where he was. There's nobody else to give it to. So he thought he got a good look, and I mean, I guess you could call it a good look at the time, but the mistake was not passing to Rozier in the first place. Nance misses three. Kuzma misses two. Who's Caruso and Josh Hart? These guys both went 0-for-2 from the line.
Oh,
even Caldwell missed a couple free throws here.
Do me a favor. If you don't know who Caruso is, you need to Google image search Alex Caruso, because you'll be shocked if an NBA player looks like this guy. I'll wait.
Wait, do I remember seeing him in this game? Where is this gentleman? Oh, sure. Yeah, you know what? I do remember seeing him in the first half, and I was like, who the hell is this guy? He looks like he's 45.
Yeah, he's not. He's like 23. He's a guy that played well for them in Summer League, and they signed him. He's like one of their two-way contract guys who's only on the team because Lonzo's hurt. And we're also playing Tyler Ennis significant minutes, who's a garbage player that we're playing because Lonzo's hurt.
All right.
The problem is
that's
this,
your
like,
Laker minutes right there. Alex Caruso, the middle-aged...
They don't really have... Yeah.
23-year-old.
Yeah. So he actually is 23 now, so I wasn't sure, but I just checked it. They don't really have a traditional point guard of the guys who play, those kind of minutes. It's like Clarkson is a hybrid. So without Lonzo, they're really just going to guys like Alex Caruso.
Interesting.
And they're still playing well, weirdly. Great.
Yeah.
What's your confidence
what does
level?
That say about Lonzo Ball? Or the Celtics won without Marcus Smart last night. What does that say about him? I don't know.
Well, I think it's a little different with Marcus because there are some redundancies there. Whereas, like, the Lakers don't have a point guard really at all without Lonzo. But let me ask you this question. Where's your confidence level standing right now about that Laker pick? Because I was thinking today, and you can tell me if you think I'm wrong, but, like, is it really the best thing for the Celtics to end up getting that Laker pick this year as opposed to the Kings pick next year? Because is that Kings pick not unprotected, first of all? Right. One and secondly, secondly, to my mind, more importantly, Jaylen Brown is a second year player right now, right? Jason Tatum is a first year player. Wouldn't it make sense to have a year gap in between? Let's just assume it all pans out, and whoever the Celtics draft with this pick, be it the Laker pick or the Celtics pick, is a guy that the Celtics are gonna like want to pay down the line, right? They get another Danny Ainge, the genius, hits on another pick. But regardless if it comes this year or next year. Isn't it better to have a year gap where you don't have to pay someone and then have the whatever other contracts to get off the books or whatever timeline wise, and then have that guy who's on his first year next season, because the Celtics probably aren't winning a title next season anyway. If they are, it's not going to be because of whatever rookie comes in. So why not have a year and then that guy, as opposed to like just having that guy come in right now? If the Celtics do get the Lakers pick, then it's probably going to be 5 or 4 at worst, right? It's not going to be 2. The Lakers, you know what I mean? Unless the lottery balls, manage to bounce in the right way. And even that is an argument for next year, because next year the lottery flattens out and the top 5 teams all have an equal shot at the number 1 pick. So really all you need for next year, if you wanted the Kings pick,
is
for the Kings.
This is where the logic stops. It was working for me, but I got to tell you the actual wording of this protection, that is. They will have to wait until next year, but it's the more favorable of the pick between the Sixers and the Kings. However, it cannot be number 1. If it is number 1, they'd get the other one. So, yes, it would still be a top 5 pick most likely, but not number 1. So continue with that information.
Okay, that's fine, but if they also can't get number 1 this year. So, that's a wash, right? In terms of, how that works. Celtics couldn't get number 1 this year anyway. They could only get 2 through 5.
No, but it's a good point about the Kings. I mean, the Sixers, think, are going to be outside of the top 10, or at least...
Right.
I will confidently say the Sixers will be outside of the top 10 in next year's draft, and likely this year's as well. But the Kings, man, I've been down on the Kings for a couple of years now, and to me, they just still do not have it together. They are dreadful, those Sacramento Kings, and that looks like a better and better option every day. So I'm picking up what you're putting down.
Yeah, because of the lottery rule changes, you don't need to be as concerned about like you are right now with the Lakers, where the Lakers are now, I think they're 9th. The NBA is weird because there are 4 or 5 different teams where the Lakers, if they lose a game or two, could drop back into that 5 spot, right? But right now they're in the 9th position, okay? So the point being is if the Lakers end up 5th, it's all likelihood they'll move probably be either 5th or 4th or 6th, one of those 3, right? But next year, if the Kings are 5th, the Kings have an equal shot at 2nd, 3rd, 4th, and 5th, and 1st. So there's an 80% chance of even if the Kings finish 5th in the next season, there's an 80% chance they'll have a better – that pick will be higher than the Lakers' pick would be if they picked 5th. That's all I'm saying. Yeah, 1 is still on the board, and they could go from 5th to 1, but that's still only a 20% chance compared to, the Lakers' odds are anyway.
No, I think that's a good point. And you know what? I mean, I've been saying that the pick is going to convey this year over and over again, and that's really just been more of me trolling you and saying the Lakers are going to be bad and that they're going to be horrible and that I don't like their roster and I think they stink than it is me saying I want the pick. I'm not necessarily saying I want the pick. I don't know what he would do with that pick. And, I mean, sure, people are high on Begley and or is it Bagley? I don't even know what this kid's name is. It doesn't Marvin, right? It doesn't even matter.
I think it's Bagley.
Is it Bagley or Bagley? So I got it right the first time, then I second-guessed myself. Anyway, if he's not going to be that transcendent star, that is just going to be the missing piece that the Celtics need to put him over the top, then why not just continue on and do what you're doing, still be the favorite to be the Eastern Conference representative in the finals to lose to Golden State?
And you know what it is? It's just the tangibility of it. That's all it is. It's because, Bagley and Ayton and these guys, Luka Doncic, we're watching them all right now, and you're going hey, I'd like that guy on the Celtics, even though, again, who knows? But it's still, who knows is still, knowing more than, who knows who the next pick next year is even going to be. Yeah, we have, high school recruiting class like number one guys, but like that changes over the course of a year every year anyway. So like we can project who might be in the draft, you know, in two seasons from now, but like that could completely flip on its head. So it feels less fun to be like, yeah, they should wait for the Kings pick. I mean, not that they have control over it, but like I still think that ultimately would work out better for them, just if you do the math on it. Like, how are the Kings going to get better? Is De'Aaron Fox going to become a superstar in the offseason? Like, what are the routes to the Kings becoming good between now and the start of next year? Trading George Hill for Tristan Thompson, and then Tristan Thompson becomes a superstar? What are we talking about?
It's a great question.
Yeah.
I don't think I have an answer for you. It's
De'Aaron Fox learned to shoot?
Sure. I'm literally speechless. I don't know what to say. How can the Kings get better? I don't think that they can. I think that they're in a bad, bad way. And I think that, like we said earlier, Charlotte might not be far behind them if they are going to get stuck either keeping Kemba Walker with nobody around him or trading him for nothing. But the Kings don't even have a guy like Kemba Walker that they could try and dangle for an all-star. If the Kings were to say, oh, well, we're not trading George Hill for anyone but an all-star, they would just be laughed out of the league. They should be relegated just for saying something like that, if that were to be the case, even though that doesn't even happen in the NBA. But it's just that's how bad that they are. And sure, they like De'Aaron Fox, but woof, Calvin, this team is not going anywhere. So I'm, you know what? I've just flipped the switch. You just flipped the switch for me. I'm now on the. I hope the Lakers pick still gets them the number one, or they fall to six, and I hope that they are horrible and terrible, but not 2 through 5. Give me that Kings pick next year, the year after. You sold.
I mean, we don't want the Sixers to get to number one, right? Why don't you just move for some success for the Lakers?
Sure.
Not success, but like...
No. You know what?
Like,
I do want the Sixers to get to number one so that they can blow it again. Just like they did with Markelle Fultz, and just like they've done in the past. Not that Embiid is them blowing it, but he did not have full seasons and still has not played a full season. We'll see what happens as they manage his minutes down the stretch. But I want to see this guy play 60 to 70 games. Maybe he'll hit 60 this year before I start dubbing him a success. Yeah, he's been awesome this year, but I want to see him stay healthy.
They got Ben Simmons too. Like, I'm not giving him. I don't want to give him another pick.
Sure.
No.
All right.
No. Especially because it's coming from the Lakers. I have to deal with like the and really it's coming from, and it's just so annoying that we're still paying the price on this. It's coming from the Lakers trading for Steve Nash 35 years ago. The pick we gave Phoenix just still hasn't been made because of circumstances. That's what this pick is from. A trade that happened. What, 6 years
Steve
ago
Nash,
now?
Right? Yeah. Interesting.
Steve Nash to the Lakers. Yeah, it makes me hate Steve Nash as well. Especially because... especially because Steve Nash got hurt in preseason. I know this is not anything fresh, but I'm so sure to talk about it now because I'm irate about it. Yeah, Steve Nash got hurt in preseason, hurt his back. If he had not played 10 games, the Lakers could have got out of his contract under insurance would have paid for the contract. Steve Nash would have gotten the payout. He would not have gotten the full length of his contract.
I remember you ranting about this on our show. This is good. This is a flashback.
Yeah, a little flashback. Yeah. And Nash said, he came out publicly and said, no, you know what? He said, I'm going to try to play this season. People asked him, like, why don't you just take the medical leave? And he said, no, I want the money. It's about the money I worked long and hard, which he didn't work for the Lakers. He literally played zero successful seasons. Anyway, he needed to play 10 games for his contract to be guaranteed. He played 11 games that season and basically never played for the Lakers again. So thanks for the two first-round draft picks, including this season's draft pick, which would be high because of Steve Nash. So, Steve Nash, you're the worst.
All right, Calvin, let's actually finish the show by taking 5 minutes to talk about some football, some real football, some real man's football, the best football in America. come 2020. It's going to be the new rage for kids and adults alike. The XFL! The XFL is coming back, Calvin!
Oh, man, did you catch the, like, one-minute promo sort of beat poetry rap that Vince McMahon put out to, like, advertise the XFL coming back? He's like, it's going to be faster, smarter, less penalties. It was like that. It was amazing. It was like the Super Bowl Shuffle reformed to like, embrace the XFL. I like how he's like, you know, the XFL is going to be family-friendly now. We're going to give it to cheerleaders. But yet he's also saying, like, yeah, you know, we don't kneel. He's like, if you want your football where they don't kneel, like, come to the XFL. He's talking about eliminating halftime, but also making it more safe, which really doesn't make sense to me at all. I feel like halftime.
Yeah, how are guys gonna get treatment?
Yeah, halftime seems like a necessary part of the grit and grind of football. He's gonna simplify the rules somehow. what's interesting to me is apparently he does not. This is what he claims. I'm sure he'll backtrack on this. But they don't have interest in a television deal. They sort of just want to make this a live thing. But then the promo seems to act like betting and like fantasy and even being a GM is like directly tied into the team. Like, I'm so fascinated by the specifics of how this would be, because I think we've talked about this before. But like, they made it seem like you as a fan of the you know, New England WrestleTriot could get, you know, Dave Brady traded if like enough of you like voted,
didn't like him,
yeah.
Ship him off to Vegas or something.
Yeah, there's like a trade proposal on the table, and like everyone can either choose to support it or veto it. If it's that, I might be in for the like the fascination of like.
Listen, yeah, I'm going to watch. I'm certainly going to check it out when it comes back. And, I mean, it's a couple years away, but it's. I think it's going to be a nice little fun thing to talk about, and maybe it'll only last another 2 to 3 years, but who knows? Maybe he'll hit on it again, and it'll become the Canadian Football League of America.
Yeah, I can't see how it's possibly going to work, honestly. I respect his, like... I respect the fact that he's trying, and like I really enjoyed the nickname jerseys, and I hope that's part of it, right? Because that was like that was literally the best thing about the XFL.
They still have the trademark for "He Hate Me," as far as I know. I think I saw that somewhere earlier today.
I thought Rod Smart got the trademark. The XFL.
No, no, no.
I didn't realize that.
Rod Smart had the trademark for a good 9 years after the XFL was around, and then they bought it from him.
Oh, wow. Really? They bought it from him, like, recently?
Within the last few years, I believe, yes. Because the XFL was, what, 2005? Let me get my numbers here. Actually, I could probably just go check out that...
XFL was 2005.
What's that?
I said, yeah, you could probably just research the He Hate Me trademark directly.
Right. But, yeah, the XFL was 2001, so I'm thinking... He Hate Me, trademark application of World Wrestling Entertainment. Yeah, 2017, they filed for the trademark. So that was last year. Maybe this is an update. What is this website? This stupid. I got to just go find the Darren Rovell thing. Okay, yeah. Just a few months ago, November. They were applying for the trademark for clothing purposes. That's I guess probably going to be one of the things that comes back. Either way, nickname jerseys, you'll get what you want.
Fair enough. Rory, before we go, I know you said this would be the last thing, but can we hit on the Hall of Fame real quick?
Yeah, go for it.
All right.
Book of a ballot process.
Yeah. So Trooper Jones, Vlad Guerrero, Jim Tomey, and Trevor Hoffman were all elected. Are you good with these dudes? Because I know, like, he was considered a great closer, but, like, I'm not super pumped about the Trevor Hoffman. And I'm not that pumped about Vlad Guerrero either, if I'm being honest.
Really? So I think that Vlad Guerrero deserves it, because I not only do I look at the Hall of Fame as a compilation of players that were the best, but also players that were the ones that you wanted to watch, the ones that stood out most in your mind, and the ones that had an impact on the game. And I think Vlad Guerrero was the type of guy that nobody really wanted to face. He could hit any ball from anywhere. And if you were watching games and watching baseball during the time that he played, he was definitely an impact player and was an MVP caliber player for many years. 10 years, he was at the top of his game. And I think that he deserves to be in. The Hoffman thing, I'm kind of with you on that one. And I'm not big on closers, or modern day closers, I should say, getting into the Hall of Fame based on saves, because I think that probably about 10 or 15 years ago, saves turned into this arbitrary thing that it was just a niche thing, and you would manipulate games to get your guys saves. And it just turned into this big numbers game, and it didn't really speak to how dominant a closer necessarily was. So I'm not all in on Hoffman. I could be persuaded to probably believe that he deserves to be in there, but Chipper Jones 100% needs to be in there. I don't know why anybody left him off their ballot. They're fools. And Jim Thome, I'm questioning as well, Calvin. So, but the Thome thing, well, to me is more. If you're gonna put Jim Thome in, and I know he didn't get his people pointing fingers at him for steroids, but he played in the era, and just, I mean, think about it. Really, you're not gonna connect those dots. If you're gonna put Thome in, I feel like you gotta put the guys like Sosa and McGuire and Manny Ramirez to an extent in the game in the Hall. I mean, Manny is a stretch, of course, but. Those types of guys, you've got to put them in if you're going to go with Thome as well.
Sorry, I was Googling home run list and I put the phone down in a second. So, Jim Thome, the thing about Jim Thome is that he's eighth all time on the home run list. He has more home runs than Sosa or McGuire for his career.
Right.
I know, like, we don't think of him because he doesn't have the 1 year like those guys. Like, he wasn't involved in, like, a historical chase. But
hit
like,
it for a long time.
But, yeah, he hit 50 home runs for, like, more years than anybody. Like, yeah, the guys that he's behind on the list, like, basically, other than Ken Griffey and Bonds, Jim Thome is, like, third of even the steroid era guys. So I know his name is not, like, exciting in the Hall of Fame sense. Like, you're not like, oh, man, Jim Thome. Part of it is, like, his name is Jim Thome, right? Boring name. And he's like a stuffy white first base guy.
A lot of strikeouts, too.
A lot
of strikeouts, this guy.
That's fine. All I'm saying is like, I think Thome is fine. Let's just do a quick, we got 5 minutes. Let's do a quick yes or no. Let me pull this list up here.
Oh, boy, here we go.
Yeah, so Hoffman, my thing is like his, I don't know, and you, it's like pitching one inning. To me, you have to basically be Mariano Rivera for me to like think.
Yep, Rivera deserves it, but that was like,
yeah.
He was dominant in night in, night out. You were scared to face him. You knew that if he came into the game, you were done. He could do it for 6 outs. He could do it for 8 outs if he had to. Hoffman wasn't.
Yeah.
He didn't have that aura about him.
And it's like his stuff was never that great, and I know that's not everything for pitchers, Greg Maddux, whatever, but like. I don't know, he just never seemed that intimidating, and he got in a situation where, like, they had leads in the ninth, and he played a lot of his years on the Padres where, like, there's no pressure to win. He's on a team that, like, he didn't have to pitch that much. I don't know. I know he played forever, and he was successful at what he did, but he was never, like, even the most intimidating closer. You know, like, is he even scarier than, like, an Andrew Miller? I don't think he's ever been better than Andrew Miller is right now. Anyway. Edgar Martinez, this is a controversial one. A lot of people are upset that he hasn't made it yet. Do you ride the Edgar Martinez train?
Not really. I don't. And it's not a DH thing either. I think
Again,
he wasn't a guy that did it for long enough. And I would think more about Vlad Guerrero as that flashy type of guy that everybody wants to watch, and everybody he made an impact on the game. yeah, Edgar Martinez is one of the greatest DHs in the history of the game, but I think that Ortiz should get in before him, and I don't know if the years would even line up to allow that to happen, but because I know you fall off the ballot at some point, but no, I'm out on Edgar Martinez.
Yeah, the problem with Edgar is he didn't get to Major League Baseball till he was 27, but he was basically awesome from like 27 to 39. If you look at his stats, and maybe you say
he did play for a long time.
Yeah, I think he's better than Ortiz in a lot of the stats. So as a hitter, you'd be surprised how good he's been. Like, to me, the DH thing is the argument. Like, if you think DHs shouldn't be in, then he shouldn't be in. If you think they should be, I don't think that there's like, just pure hitting, I don't think there are a lot of guys historically who are better than him, unless you want to go, like, compiling stats, because I think he only has, like, 370 home runs. Anyway,
well,
Lucina, in or out?
Pure hitting should let Pete Rose in. So, anyway, we digress.
Yeah. Ooh. We'll do more quickly now. Lucina, in or out?
Out.
Agreed. Good, but not quite good enough at any point.
Yep.
Roger Clemens is Barry Bonds. In or out?
Both in.
Yeah. I mean, yeah.
20 strikeouts, home run king, multiple times. And on top of that, Bonds was a MVP candidate before the whole steroids thing. I don't care about the steroids, guys. It's part of the era. If you want to put something in the Hall of Fame and write about it and say, look, these guys, we believe that they belong here, but they did this stuff, that's fine. I'm in on both of those guys. I think they both deserve it.
Yeah, War has Bonds as the second best hitter of all time behind Babe Ruth, and Clemens as the best pitcher of all time. So, I mean, yeah, steroids or no steroids, like, they are clearly Hall of Famers, and it's ridiculous that they're not. And Schilling, I'll do one more. Good Schilling. We're almost out of time.
Oh, man, I'm borderline on Schilling. I'm borderline on Schilling, but I think that he probably deserves to be there because he's a multiple World Series winner, and he had a large part in the times that they won the World Series. So, yeah, whether it was Arizona or the Red Sox, he was a huge part of those teams and had a big impact. I think he deserves to be in, but I wouldn't do a first ballot for him.
Yeah, I sort of feel like it's funny because the narrative with him pushes him both ways, right? There are people who don't want him in because they hate his personality and his politics, and then there are people who, like, do want him in because of the Bloody Sox narrative and all that. I don't know.
Yeah.
My feelings on him at this point are like, too complex to even. I do feel like he's borderline, but I would lean towards him not being in.
I tried to block out all of the rhetoric that he spews and all the outside stuff that's been happening for the past few years with him, and focus only on his baseball career when I say that I believe he deserves to be in the Hall of Fame. So forget about all that other crap. If that factored into it, then I don't want anything to do with that guy.
All right, fair enough. All right, Ray, I think we're done. You want to play that music?
All right, I do. Goodbye.
Good night, everyone.
The way you work it,
no diggity.
I thought to bag it up.
Bag it up.
I like the way you work it,
no diggity.